It's working. Okay. Then we can start. This is our last lecture in this course. The terminology will be a bit abstract. Maybe you, some of you haven't heard at least the second part is for the mathematicians, I would say. And the first part, you may be familiar with some aspects of it because it's information theory, so those who study telecommunications or similar, they will know something. But the other part is about probabilistic algorithms. I don't think many of you are familiar with that, so we are going to explain the details. Let's see. Okay. Okay, I shall need some pens. So, after a short introduction, we are going to discuss basically two models of ideas, the information theoretic model and the computational complexity model. So this information theoretic model, you will have something that you can compute here. So it's, and it's easier to understand. So these two models, actually, they share some elements when it comes to what the components are. However, the components are treated differently, so you are going to see. The other one is computational complexity model, where all is about probabilistic algorithms, how to run them, and say that it is an IDS. So we have seen so far the IDS, the examples of IDS that have actually been developed as technical products. So industry wants these products to be bought to earn some money on them. But they did not think too much about theoretical foundations of ideas. Okay, they might not be interesting, but we are. So the scientific community needed a theory of ideas. Why? Because you describe what an idea is, but you would like to theoretically prove that it works. So we have seen so far that some of these ideas that looks like very well defined, but in practice they actually didn't work because of various factors. A typical one is this base rate fallacy, things like that. So theoretically it could have been possible to explain in advance before designing and wasting time and money in the development of something that doesn't work. Or better to say, that cannot work because it's theoretically not possible. Like if you are not heavily under attack, then whatever you do, it will not work. No? Now, the other aspect of this is how to measure IDS effectiveness. So what is a good IDS from the theoretical point of view? So we are now going to discuss two models that try to answer these questions. Actually, these are rather old, so they are like 15 years old. However, they are characteristic models. So they actually illustrate what parts of theory have been tried to define such models. So the first one is information theory, things that have been developed the last 80 years. So the mathematical apparatus that was used there can be used to define theoretical quality of IDS. And the other one is a computational complexity model that uses probabilistic algorithms and the probabilities of success of experiments under certain conditions. So the information theoretic model treats an IDS as a communication system. And then if you treat such a system as a communication system, then you can do what you usually do with a communication system, which means you analyze channel capacity, you analyze losses, the probability of success, of correct detection, etc., etc. So this is what you usually do with communication systems. So on the input of a communication channel, you send some information. It can be analog, it can be digital. It's easier to explain if it is digital. So you send some zeros and ones, and then on the output of this channel, you receive some zeros and ones. But there is noise in channel, and then because of that noise, some of these bits have been complemented. So this is an error. Okay? And regarding the capacity, the question arises how high can be the symbol rate on the input in order to use the communication channel to the maximum extent possible. Then the computational complexity model treats an IDS as a set of probabilistic algorithms. Okay? So you will see the typical representation classification, you will see. So we start with the explanation of the information theoretic model and what will be the elements of the IDS in that model, and then the information theoretic measures that can be computed on that model. That's the idea. So, the intrusion detection process that is in this information theoretic model is actually considered as a series of data processing and transformation algorithms. So we can use the same mathematical apparatus that is used in telecommunications, which is information theory. So we start with entropy and all that. Then an IDS can be analyzed as a whole, as a black box. So you have some input, like in communication channel. You have some input, you have some output, and you measure the error, which is the overall IDS performance. So how accurate the decisions are. And when we talk about capacity, we have the same thing. If the information rate is too high in our IDS, we have mentioned that many times so far, there will be a drop of packets, and then because of that, you will miss some events. So that's the same as if you had a communication channel to which you pump the information on the input at a too high rate. then we can study that IDS component-wise, and in this case, in this concrete case, in this lecture, we are going to study that in as two components. The one will be the representation, the other will be classification. So we study the effectiveness of each component, and then the system as a whole. Now, first, before we can compute something on that model, we have to define the model. So what are the components of the model? Not these components, but what are the elements? It would be better to say, what are the elements of the model? So we have four data structures and four algorithms in this model. So any IDS in this model is an eight-tuple consisting of D, sigma, F, and K, which are the data structures, and S, R, P, and C, which are the algorithms. The IDS model is data-driven because these structures have to be built from the existing data. It's like training a classifier with no data, labeled data. It's a special case of this model, actually. And then the algorithms that are elements of this model, they are used to compute the effectiveness of the IDS. So the goal of all this is to evaluate an IDS. That's why we say that it is evaluation-oriented. So what are the data structures? The four data structures, D, sigma, F, and K, are the following. And then we are going to explain each of them. The data source is D. It's raw data. Okay? So the data that IDS analyzes. Then we have a finite state of data state sigma, which is the output. So it's either normal or abnormal, or normal and attack 1, attack 2, etc., etc. It's the number of classes. So we have studied IDS so far as a classification system where this sigma would be the number of classes. Then a feature vector F representing a data unit, which may be a packet or a session. So the feature vector is you have raw data, but you cannot measure everything on raw data. You measure the relevant information, and that's in such a way you get the feature vector. So you perform the measurements each time you measure something. So you can measure now the CPU time, the memory usage, network usage, for example, three components, and then after 10 seconds you measure again, so you get another feature vector F, and then another feature vector. So each time when you measure, you get a feature vector. And then you have the knowledge base K about the data profiles, normal or abnormal, which is, in the misuse detection case, it will be database of known attack signatures. In anomaly base, it will be this set of thresholds, whether it is over 50% CPU or under, et cetera, something like that. So it's called the knowledge base in this model. So this is built once, and then it's used a long time afterwards in the production, but it may be renewed to adapt the system to the changes of the environment. So these were the four data structures that are the components of this A tuple. Then we have four algorithms that actually are used to build some of these data structures. Of course, not the first one, because the first one is what is done, so what is given. It's the raw data. So first of all, it's the feature selection algorithm, S, then a data reduction and representation algorithm, R, then the profiling algorithm, which generates the knowledge base K, and the classification algorithm, which is the heart of the system, which is actually, once you build the system, you execute only this classification algorithm. So we have feature selection, sounds like classification that we have used before. Then this is called data reduction and representation algorithm, R, which means how do you get these feature vectors? Once you define what will be the components of these feature vectors. And then, after that, you can build the knowledge base, for example, the training, if it is an anomaly-based system, or if it is a misuse base, you use an expert to say, this is the signature of this attack. This attack leaves traces here and there, etc., etc., so you put that as a record in a misuse database. So, but still, it is generating the knowledge base. So it's only the difference in how you do it. So what is the algorithm? And, of course, after you do all this, then you run the system and then it will classify the traffic as good or bad, or this attack or that attack. Okay, let's explain everything in detail. So the data source is a sequence of consecutive data units that, as we said in the beginning of this course, we can make an abstraction, actually, of these data units. It doesn't have to be TCP, IP protocol, or whatever. But in most cases, in nowadays traffic, thank you, in nowadays traffic, it's packets, and it may be a single packet that is considered one at a time, or it can be several packets between two addresses without any interruption. That's called a session or a flow. We have seen that before. So a data source unit could be a single packet or a session. Now, in the network-based system, it will be D1, D2, etc., etc. Each DI is the data unit that is analyzed by an IDS. If we analyze one packet at a time, that's called stateless analysis. So we take one packet, then another packet. So D is P1, P2, so packet 1, packet 2, etc. Now, if it is stateful analysis, then we analyze a session at a time. So each session is several packets. But then D is S1, S2, so this is session 1, session 2, etc., etc. But each session, for example, S1 is P1, P2, etc., etc. S2 is P1, P2, it's on. So this is the data source. In the host base, so this was in the network base, in the host base it will be, for example, records or system calls. So it can be C1, C2, so we have each this C1, C2, etc., etc. It's a system call sequence, which is small C1, small C2, etc. So each of these big Cs consists of small Cs. So each of these small C is a system call. We have mentioned all that in our previous lectures. So you either have network-based system or you have a host-based system. So the data unit is different. So if we are talking about network-based, then we are talking about packets or sessions. If we are talking about host-based, we are talking about, for example, system call system, but it can be operating system log entries. Now, a set of data states which characterizes a data unit from a security point of view. We are interested in the security point of view. So it's either normal or abnormal, at least. We may have more than two data states. For example, what is the type of intrusion if it is an intrusion? So then we have normal, then A1, A2, etc. Now, we have to define a concept of Oracle IDS. Oracle IDS is a perfect IDS, the IDS that knows the ground truth. So for each data unit, it knows with 100% correctness whether it is good or bad or which one of the attacks it is. We simplify the things and say that it is just two classes, good or bad, or normal or abnormal. This Oracle IDS is, as we said, always correct. The Oracle IDS always knows the ground truth of all the data. And when we train the IDS, the building phase, that's actually true. So as if we had an Oracle IDS, we actually have an expert that performed the labeling of data. So he or she knows for each data unit that was used for training whether it was good or bad. Then, in the case of Oracle IDS defined, then the state of a data unit DI is actually the output of the Oracle IDS on that same data unit, because Oracle IDS knows everything, knows for each data unit whether it is good or bad, 100% correctly. For anomaly detection, we have normal or abnormal. Okay, for misuse detection, we have normal, attack 1, attack 2, because we can identify attacks completely. So we may have N, A1, A2, AN, etc., etc. Now, what is characteristic for sigma? It's that it is always finite. We cannot have infinite sigma, which is, to some extent, good. it simplifies the classification. Then we have a feature vector. So that's the next data component of an IDS. It's a finite number of features, F1, F2, to Fn, where every feature is some meaningful attribute of a data unit, which means we have measured something like CPU time. Or on network, it can be duration of the connection or protocol type, something that can be measured. So it's one component of this feature vector. For example, if we take protocol type as a feature, then we have TCP, UDP, ICMP, and maybe more. So something like that. Now, the range of the whole feature vector is, of course, the product of the spaces of all features. If we have this, and then we have CPU time from 0 to 1, then you have infinite number of possibilities, because the other component, the CPU time, is infinite. So the number of possibilities is infinite. It's a continuous value between 0 and 1. But if you had two discrete, then you would have here three possibilities, and for example, you measure something else with four possibilities, then you have 12 in total. So it's the product of spaces of all features. Finally, the knowledge base K, that's the last data component of our model. It contains, it's a database, it contains profiles of normality or abnormality, which means a database of misuse signatures. Now, for every IDS, of course, it's different. It may be a rule set, it may be a Markov model. You remember when we talked about this, we said that the measurement is abnormal if its probability of transition from one state to another is too low. Then this K is a rule set or attack signatures in the misuse base case. In anomaly base case, it's some set of normality profiles. So the CPU must be below 50 or something like that. Then it's normal. That's the knowledge base. Now the algorithm. The most important one actually is the feature selection algorithm. Why is that? Because we have to decide what is relevant for intrusion detection, what to measure. So is CPU time, memory usage, network usage, are they relevant? Maybe. So we decide that. So for a data source D and the corresponding states for each of these data units in D, and these are known because it's Oracle IDS that knows them, the feature selection algorithm S returns the relevant features for the IDS. Now, if we use machine learning, for example, it will be mainly manual labor performed by the experts, sometimes semi-super. So we do clustering and then an expert evaluates this clustering, something like that. If we use deep learning, it will be extracted directly, these features will be extracted directly from D. If we have many layers and a lot of data at the disposal, then we could do that. Now, the quality of features actually influences the IDS effectiveness to a great extent. So that's why this algorithm is actually the most important. If you, in the beginning, decide erroneously that you have to measure something that is totally irrelevant for intrusion detection, you will get bad decisions of the system. Now, once you decide about what to measure, then this data reduction and representation algorithm actually performs these measurements. So it's a mapping of data units to their feature representations. So you have previously decided what to measure, and then from a raw data, unit D, you get its feature representation algorithm where you perform these measurements that you have decided by means of algorithm S. So that's called feature extraction. So you should not mix feature selection and feature extraction. Feature selection is something that you do once, and then feature extraction, you perform these measurements. You get these features that were selected each time you perform the measurements. Then we have the profiling algorithm that actually builds the knowledge base K. So given label feature vector representations of data units, the algorithm P returns the profiling knowledge base. So it's like training if we are talking about machine learning. Or if we are talking about misuse, then given the indicators of intrusion, which are in our case features, we can say that, then an expert gathers all the indicators of a particular intrusion, puts them in the database in the form of a rule or a signature. So you can do that with misuse base as well. Finally, we have the classification algorithm, which is the workhorse of our IDS. So it's a mapping of feature vector representations of data units, D. Now we are having unlabeled data, so we don't know whether they are good or bad. And then we map, we perform the measurements, get this vector F, and then we map this vector to good or bad. So like data states. Now, of course, to get this mapping, you have to consult the knowledge base. There are three fundamental IDS procedures: feature selection, profiling, and detection. So feature selection by the algorithm S, profiling by the algorithm R, and the algorithm P, you get the database K, and then detection, the algorithm C. The feature selection is executed only once at the design time of an IDS. The features that are selected in this process will be used always in the profiling and the detection procedures. There are two inputs to the feature selection: the data source, of course, that sends the data units D1, D2, etc., so maybe packets, okay? And then you have the Oracle IDS, which is very often a human, an expert that says, okay, this one is bad, because when you measure the CPU time, memory usage, and network usage, which are relevant for this attack to be detected, then you get this, this, and this value. The output is a set of labeled, of selected features. So and, you see, for example, for the D1, there may be needed that you measure CPU time, memory usage, and network usage. For D2, which is also, say, an attack, you have to measure something else. For example, how many files have been opened, etc., etc., in the unit of time. But in total, the relevant features are CPU times, memory usage, network usage, and how many files you have opened at some unit. You see? So the set of selective features has to be relevant for intrusion detection in general, which means it has to encompass all the features that are needed to recognize all these attacks. And the features to recognize some different attacks may be totally different. So you have to make a union. So union of sets means that the repeated elements will be used only once, but the others that are not repeated have to be included. You know what union is. Schematically, we can say the feature selection algorithm, as seen on the slide 21, you have two inputs, the data source and an expert, an Oracle IDS that says, okay, this D1 is normal, but in order to determine that it is normal, we have measured that CPU time, memory usage, and network usage. So the feature selection algorithm is not interested in concrete values of CPU time, memory usage, and network usage. It is interested in whether it is necessary to measure CPU time, memory usage, and network usage in order to decide that this piece of data is normal. That's what the feature selection algorithm does. So on the output of this feature selection algorithm, you get the feature. So what to measure? In order for all these data source units coming from the data source, to determine whether it is normal or abnormal, or if you have more classes than for each class. Now, that was feature selection. Then the second activity is profiling. Now we have to build the database. We have decided on what to measure. And then we get some data and that is labeled. So then we use the training procedure on the super supervised case. So if we are using machine learning or something like that on for intrusion detection, then it will be training. If we are using a clustering-based algorithm, then we don't have profiling at all. So the profiling is actually intrinsic in the sense that some similarity of data, it's only the distance measure that determines here. So whether two data units are similar or not. So profiling is executed during the IDS design time. The database is built based on some training data. So that's running a training procedure. So the profiling algorithm, call it P, whose input is the output of the data reduction representation algorithm R that will give us the feature vectors, is run on training data. Training data is labeled, so we know for each training piece of training data whether it is good or bad. Of course, the training data set must be sufficiently large, otherwise the knowledge base will not be representative. So that will be the source of errors. The output is, as we said, the knowledge base K, which is considered relatively stable, but it has to be normally updated periodically, which means either new attacks appear or some behavior that was considered abnormal before, it's now considered normal, or the other way around. So the environment has changed, so we have to update the knowledge base K. Schematically, it would be like that. As seen on the slide 24, you have the data source. From this data source, you perform the measurements to get the vectors, feature vectors, and that's done by means of this representation algorithm R. And then you have an Oracle IDS that for each of these data units knows whether they are normal or abnormal. And then this profiling algorithm will, based on the measurements performed, give the content of the knowledge base case for each of these data units that are possible. So it will say, this one is normal, this one is normal. So if we are talking about misuse detection, then these two ends will not be in the database. Because in the database, we only collect the signatures of attacks. So this one, the third one, is an attack. Now the profiling algorithm, based on the measurements performed for this particular data unit, will say if CPU time is 65%, that's bad, so we put that in the knowledge base K. Finally, we have the detection, which is the productive phase of IDS work, where we use the IDS that we have built to detect intrusions in the data generated by the data source. That's, of course, normal IDS operation. Now, if we look at the information theoretic modeling, then if we look at the IDS as a whole, that would be a black box that actually performs this detection procedure. So on the input you have some traffic, on the output you have normal, abnormal of this black box. This is illustrated on this slide 26. So, of course, now we don't have, you see, we don't have the Oracle IDS. Instead, we have a knowledge base that was built by means of the Oracle IDS. You see, the rest is the same. So the rest is the decisions. You see, the first two, the system has decided that they are normal. The third one is abnormal. And why? Because this, if it is a misuse base, it was in the database. So there was a match. And this representation algorithm extracted, or that's the feature extraction, from the raw data, unit D3, it extracted, say, CPU time, memory usage, network usage, and it was shown in the knowledge base that this combination of these three values that were measured on the data unit D3 is bad. Because of that, this classification algorithm will decide that it is an attack. So the difference between the previous algorithm, the profiling algorithm, and this one is only in this. So the knowledge base is actually the knowledge that was accumulated during the training, during profiling. Okay, now we have defined the elements of the model. Now, what can we measure on this model? So, you see, it's data-driven and it's evaluation-oriented, which means we now build the data set, the knowledge base, et cetera, and based on that, when we perform some measurements on this system, we get the value of its effectiveness, something like that. So we have to define some measures. Last week we mentioned one of them, and that's this CID. Now we are going into more details about this. To this end, we have to define the values that maybe you are familiar with them from before: entropy, conditional entropy, and mutual information, because they are included in these measures. So when we talk about entropy, we usually mean Shannon's entropy. In this case, we mean Shannon's entropy. However, Shannon's entropy is just a special case of Rainier's entropy. Now, this is just a digression. So the Shannon's entropy is defined this way. So if for a discrete random variable, so if the outcomes of the experiments have probabilities pi, P1, P2, P3, et cetera, for each possible value of xi, then we take the logarithm for the base 2 and multiply with this probability, sum for each of these values of x, and take the negative value. Why? Because we want entropy to be positive, and the logarithms of probability, since probabilities are smaller than 1, are always negative. So this sum will be totally negative for each possible probability, then you have to negate that in order to get a positive function. So otherwise it would be like that. Now, Rainier entropy, just to put it on the whiteboard, but actually, I don't know whether you've seen on the camera. So it would be H alpha of x is 1 divided by 1 minus alpha. The logarithm for the base 2 of the sum I goes from 1 to n for the discrete random variable pi to alpha, where alpha is not 0, alpha is not 1, and of course the sum of the probabilities is 1. Okay, so that's Rainier entropy. Now, you see, there are some similarities. If you put alpha to be 1, okay, then this would be much like, looks like Shannon's entropy. So for homework, but you see, it's 1 minus 1 here, so you cannot do it just like that. So you have to put limit. So alpha tends to 1 of this. H alpha of x is what we get, minus sum pi logarithm for the base 2 of pi. Yeah? Can you see? Mm-hmm. Now for homework, actually, you can try to get this. Well, the hint is use L'Hopital rule.
Yeah.
So it's easy. You will see. Now, of course, this is just off topic, because we are interested only in this entropy, which is a special case of Rainier's entropy. Rainier's entropy is used elsewhere, for example, in physics, and its special case is this. Now, entropy, Shannon's entropy takes the value between 0 and 1. The smaller values means less entropy. Entropy is a measure of uncertainty. So less entropy would mean more certainty. Now, if you have just two possible values, you can draw this in the plane. See? So you have, well, this is well known. So if you have probability of both events to be 0.5, which means coin tossing, just random, then you have maximum entropy. So the uncertainty is maximum. So if you go to the left or to the right, then the entropy reduces. So it can be, if you just have heads or you just have tails when you toss the coin, so the entropy would be zero because you know the outcome in advance. Now, if you have two variables where one variable depends on the other, then you have conditional entropy. So what is the entropy of X given Y? So if you know the value of Y, how this affects the entropy of X? So this is uncertainty of a random variable X after another random variable Y becomes known to us, to the observer. So it's joint probability times logarithm for the base 2 of the conditional probability P of X if Y. Now, what does this mean? If this conditional entropy is zero, which means it's totally certain that if you know Y, you know X. You see that the value of X is completely determined by the value of Y. So I know Y, then I know X without problem. So that's conditional entropy that is equal to zero. The other way around, if you don't get any information about the value of X, if you know Y, that means that X and Y are totally independent. Then the entropy of X if Y is the same as the entropy of X. So the contribution of Y is no one. There is no contribution. Whether you know Y or not, it doesn't matter. You will not know anything about X. You will not know more about X if you receive Y or not. So the a posteriori, this would be in terms of probability. If it were probability, this is entropy. It's not the same. It's related to logarithms of probability. However, if it were probability, the conditional probability of X is Y would be the same as the probability. So the a posteriori probability would be equal to the a priori probability. So you don't learn anything about X if you know Y. Of course, H of X if Y must be between 0 and H of X, because these two are extreme cases that actually never happen in practice. So that's conditional entropy. We need that. Finally, we need mutual information. We have two random variables, X and Y, whose joint probability is P of X, Y, and marginal probability is P of X and P of Y. And then marginal probabilities you get from the joint probabilities. So you sum them by row and by column. We shall have these examples in the exercise. Then mutual information between X and Y is the amount of reduction of uncertainty in X after Y is known, or the other way around. So this is written this way, I of X, Y. That's computed this way. So the joint probability times the logarithm for the base 2 of this joint probability divided by marginal probabilities, the product of them. So what is this mutual information? It's actually the remaining uncertainty in X when we get Y, when we receive Y. So that's the remaining uncertainty in X, which means it's a kind of, this can be computed as a kind of difference in entropies, as we have seen already when we define CID. So we shall see that. So mutual information is a measure of information shared between two random variables. If it is zero, that means that X and Y are totally independent. So there is no mutual information between X and Y. Now, obviously, the properties will be that this mutual information is between 0 and H of X. And then its symmetric property, I of XY is the same as I of YX. And then this is important because this is how you can compute the mutual information. It's the difference in entropies, you see. So H of X minus H of X if Y, or H of Y minus H of Y if X. So if you can compute the entropy of X and its conditional entropy, P provided y is known, then you can compute the mutual information. And this is exactly what we do in our CID definition. Okay, let's have a break.
So what was your proposal?
Yeah, it's 5G for
So 5G enable wireless network security threat landscape of social roles in public.
It's wireless.
Wireless 6051.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Sounds okay. Yeah.
Good. Some interesting research that has been done here.
No problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we can continue now. So we have defined these information theoretic concepts that we need to define these measures, that not information theoretic measures on ideas. So our model, we are going to simplify a bit. We are going to say that it is an anomaly detection system with two classes, normal and abnormal. But this all can be easily generalized into more than two classes, and it is also applicable in misuse detection as well. So you can consider that for each attack in misuse detection knowledge base, it's a separate class. Now, we treat an IDS as a communication system. The data source is the information source in the communication system. The data reduction and representation algorithm is the encoder on the transmitting side, and the classification algorithm is the decoder on the receiving side. The question arises, what is the algorithm S, the feature selection algorithm? Let's see. What do you think? What would be the feature selection algorithm in this system? It would be actually which of the codes to choose. Okay? So to get the feature vector. So that's what S gives us, the feature selection algorithm. So we have the information source, we have the encoder, and we have the decoder. But there is a principal difference between a communication system and an IDS. In communication, what we want is to correctly recover the information. This is something that we do not want in IDS. We have a lot of input data and we just have 0-1, so good or bad, or very small number of categories. So we want to categorize, to classify actually the input data. So it's a principal difference between the communication system and an IDS, and it actually simplifies the things. So we don't want our IDS to recover the information. So we want to decide whether this information belongs to this category or that category, or a small number of categories. But the technique that is used in communication systems for computations of its effectiveness are the same. So we said IDS is observed as a black box where the input has a state. So it's either normal or abnormal. So this X is some random variable that actually it is an input. You see, we don't know in advance what it is. So on the output doesn't know what the input is. Okay? The output is the decision about the input. Is it good or bad? So that's sigma. So Y is between N, it belongs to this set, N or A, normal or abnormal. Now, since we don't know the input in advance, otherwise it would not make any sense to make any decisions. We would know in advance what the decision would be. So since we don't know, we may make a mistake when map to X to Y, when we map to, from X to Y. So these two cases, true negatives and true positives, they are good. So we either guess that there was no attack, or we guess that there was an attack. Now, in between, we have two cases that are errors. So there was no attack, and we our system says that it is an attack, so we have a false positive, or there was an attack, and our system doesn't detect it, so it's a false negative. So since our black box makes decisions on X, it may make a wrong decision, hopefully with small probability. Now, the state of the data unit, DI, XI is from sigma. Okay? So from I going from first packet, second packet, or session, whatever. The state stream, X is X1, X2, etc., etc., where XIs are Oracle IDS of DI. Oracle knows everything. So now the transition probabilities would be true negative, would be the probability that Y is N if X is N, which is 1 minus false positive rate. Then true positive rate, that would be probability of Y is A if X is A, which is 1 minus false negative rate. And then in between we have errors. The false positive rate is probability of Y is A but when X is N. And false negative rate, probability that Y is N if X is A. And the system would be like that. This is a black box, this IDS. On input, the input can be either normal or attack. The output, we decide on input and we say it is normal or attack. Now, if we have decided correctly when N was on input normal, then we have this transition. If we have decided correctly that it was an attack, when it was an attack, we have this transition. And the error transitions are like this. If we have an attack and we say there is no attack, that's this transition. That's false negative. And if we say that it is an attack when it was no attack, that's false positive, and that's this transition. We have already mentioned this intrusion detection capability. Now, we know that it is mutual information between X and Y, normalized by the entropy of X, where mutual information can be computed as the difference in entropies. So the entropy of X minus the conditional entropy of X if Y, of course normalized with H of X. So CID is normalized mutual information between X and Y, which means how much ground truth information about the state of data unit an IDS can identify. So it can be much about that or a little about that. And the measure, you know, information theory, it's bit, but this bit is not bits 0 and 1, so it can be a decimal value. So this is something that you have to understand. Now, that was the abstract information theoretic model that considered IDS as a whole. Now, if we partition this IDS into at least two components, then we are talking about so-called clustered IDS model, which is similar. However, we distinguish between the representation algorithm and the classification algorithm. So we have two black boxes in a row. Now, the representation component, feature representation component, actually has three outputs. So it clusters all the feature representations of input data into three classes: normal, abnormal, or undistinguishable. We are going to explain why this. Now, the IDS oracle labels each feature representation Fi in such a way that this label of Fi is from these three values, N, U, or A. Now, why do we have undistinguishable? Because the feature representation is never ideal, which means there may be two pieces of data that have the same feature representation. Because if we measure absolutely everything possible on a raw data, then it would be always N or A. However, since we cannot do that, then it will always be an error in feature representation. Now, there are, of course, three possibilities. The feature vectors that can only originate from normal data units, they get label N, that's okay. The feature vectors that can only originate from abnormal data units, then they get this label A. However, there are feature vectors that can originate from both normal and abnormal data units. They obtain this state label U, undistinguished. So formally, it could be like this. The label of Fi is N, which is the same as for each data unit DJ. The representation of DJ is Fi, and the Oracle IDS says that it is normal. The same for attack. Well, similar for attacks. So if the label is attack, that means that for each DJ, that's very important. So for each whatever data unit we take, if the representation algorithm gives that its representation is Fi, and the Oracle IDS says that it is for this data unit that it is abnormal, then it is abnormal label. However, since this algorithm is not 100% capable of doing this, exactly because this is every, you see, for all. Now, since the representation algorithm is not ideal, then there will be some data units DJ and DK that are not the same. such that the representation algorithm for DJ will give FI, and the representation algorithm for DK will also give FI, you see? And the Oracle IDS will say that for DJ it is normal, and Oracle IDS will say for DK that it is abnormal. Then we cannot decide, you see? So that's because of the subtleties, let's say, of this representation algorithm. It's not ideal. It will not be capable of, for all DJs, saying that it is either A or N. So there will be at least one case for which there will be two different data units with the same label, the same presentation, sorry, for the with the same presentation, for which the Oracle IDS, which means an expert, will say, this DJ is normal, and this DK is an attack. Then the representation algorithm will give actually this undistinguishable mark. So we have to introduce a new random variable, Z, that is between X and Y. Okay, and this Z takes three values, N, U, and A. So we have three random variables actually in this order, X, Z, and Y. And we start the IDS component-wise, we start from the feature representation, then we define why are we doing this, because we want to measure how good is the feature representation algorithm. And for this, we can define the feature representation capability, CR. It's very similar to CID, however, here we have three outputs from the feature representation algorithm. So, what's feature representation capability? It's normalized mutual information between X and Z. So for CID, we have normalized mutual information between X and Y. So this is how we treat our IDS model. It has two components. One is the representation algorithm, and the other is the classification algorithm. Okay? And of course, we can consider the overall capability. Now, the representation algorithm, as we said, has three outputs, N, A, and U. Now, what happens if our representation algorithm cannot decide whether this is N or A? Then it decides U, and then with such an input, the classification algorithm can decide whether it is normal or abnormal, so at random. Now, if our feature representation algorithm gives that its label is such that it can only be from a normal traffic, then this, by the classification algorithm, can also be erroneously classified as abnormal. So then we have a false positive. And if our feature representation algorithm is such that for this particular piece of data, DI, it can only be abnormal, then the classification algorithm can also ignore this and say that the traffic is normal. So we have false negative. But if the feature representation algorithm is such that two different values can give normal or abnormal, then we have undecided. Then the classification algorithm, well, it's just pure guess. In that case. Now, the feature representation capability is defined the same way as the CID. So we have mutual information between X and Z, you see, this and this, normalized by the entropy of X, which is the difference in entropies, H of X minus H of X if Z divided by H of X. Now, how can we interpret this? If CR is close to 1, that's good. So a greater CR means a better feature representation capability, which means that this here, the entropy of X if Z, that actually tends to zero, which means Z completely determines X, or almost. Then this actually, this gets to 1. So if this is 0, then CR is 1. So if X is completely determined by Z. That would actually mean that there is no U. You see? So if there is no U, then the model reduces to the previous model.
Yeah.
This one. Because U has never appeared. Now, if not that ideal case, if there are U symbols on the output of the representation algorithm, then we have loss of information when a transition from X to Z occurs. This means CR is smaller than 1. If the representation algorithm is really bad, then this tends to H of X, which means CR tends to 0, which is very bad. So the representation algorithm actually spoils the whole IDS. And when can that happen in practice, by the way? It can happen when our feature selection algorithm says that we should measure CPU usage, memory usage, and network usage, and we should not. So we should measure something else from the raw data. So the code that we choose is very important. So that was the feature representation component. The other one is the classification algorithm. However, we cannot study mutual information between Z and Y. Why? Because of this. So we don't know what this is. So whether it is N or A. So we could actually define something like I of YZ. Okay? So that then we would have to know the entropy of Y. But we cannot do that because we don't have this. Now, we can use joint probability of X and Y because X is the input to everything and Y is the output of everything. So we can do that, but in between, we cannot do that. So Z we cannot measure. So we can define the classification information loss. So we have the feature representation capability, CR, and then we have the classification information loss. And we can define it as something like this. The difference between mutual information of X, Y, and Z and mutual information of Y and Z. Normalized by H of X. Now for this, this difference is such that it is actually between the conditional entropy is between these two values. So this difference is actually the mutual information between X and Z if Y. Now, how could we compute that? Difficult. It's difficult. So we cannot do that just like that. So, but what we know about this classification information loss is that it is between 0 and 1, and the smaller classification information loss means, of course, if it is loss, a smaller loss means a better classification algorithm. The ideal would be LC equal to 0, that there would be no errors in classification. Now, can we compute this directly? No. But, and you should read the paper that you can find in Blackboard, there is a theorem. So the proof you read there, however, the theorem says that if you have CID and CR, then you can compute LC. Because you see, CID is CR minus LC. Of course, the proof that would be several pages, but it holds. Which means we don't have to compute this LC directly from the definition, because if you can compute CID, which you can, and CR, which you also can do, then LC is actually the difference, CR minus CID. You see, CR is always greater than or equal to LC, which means CR actually determines how good the overall system will be. You see, so the representation is extremely important, which means the encoding that you choose, The selection of features that you choose is extremely important for the quality of the IDS. That means that CID is always smaller than or equal to CR. So CR is actually the first thing you should compute. So CID cannot be better than that. Now we are going to use that in our exercise tomorrow. You will see that it is actually not so difficult to compute. So don't compute it this way. Compute it this way. Well, we have defined the information theoretic model and what we can compute on that model. So how can we apply that in practice? We can precisely evaluate IDS and its components, at least two, the representation algorithm and the classification algorithm, by using the CID for overall effectiveness, CR for the effectiveness of representation algorithm, and LC for the effectiveness of the classification algorithm. Since we can precisely evaluate IDS and its components, we can compare different IDS. So we compute these values for one IDS and we compute these values for another IDS, and we actually compare them as overall CID1 versus CID2 and components CR1 versus CR2 or LC1 versus LC2. Then we can optimize the overall performance CID. Optimizing means getting the optimal IDS operation point. So what parameters of IDS to choose to get the maximum CID? Now, the same can we do with the representation algorithm. So what parameters we can choose to maximize CR? And consequently, by maximizing CR, we maximize CID as well. Which means find the optimal feature set. And why is that? Because the feature selection algorithm actually determines the quality of representation. So an ideal feature set, if we guess the right code, as we would say in the communication terminology, an ideal feature set would produce no U signal, so no undistinguishable feature representation vectors. If such vectors appear, we can carefully add more features to eliminate such cases, well, to reduce to a minimum, I would say. That will improve CR and avoid information loss or reduce it to a minimum in the transition from X, the input, to the IDS, and Z, the output of the feature representation algorithm. Now, this will not guarantee a decrease in LC. Why is that? Because we cannot affect LC by this procedure. We may get overfitting in classification. Now, when we compare two different IDS, the different feature sets and classification algorithms between these two IDS, but we can still compute these three values for both IDS and compare them, and then we can know why one IDS is better than the other. It may be because of poor representation of the other one, which means a lower CR, or it may be because of the classification information loss, LC, that is greater in the other one than in the first one. So we find a bottleneck in the IDS design, and then we can improve that second IDS. We can also increase CR by reselecting the feature set, okay? Or we can add in more features. We can add more features, which means a better feature selection algorithm. For example, Zeek that we have mentioned is better than other misuse-based IDS since it is capable of analyzing the context of input data, which actually means that it adds new features bearing in mind the context. So it's more intelligent, so we have a better feature selection algorithm. Now, that was about the feature selection to increase CR, but we can also improve the data reduction and representation algorithm R, which means that we can include stateful analysis instead of stateless. So packet by packet, it's not as precise as to analyze session by session, because the data may be shared between several packets. The knowledge base K influences the classification algorithm, a more accurate knowledge base K reduces LC. All that taken into account, we can build a very good system that is also bad because it doesn't work in real time. So it has to be fast. So it's not just accuracy that matters, it's also speed that matters. So the algorithms S and P are not required to run at real, in real time because they are run offline. Okay? Before we start the IES. But the algorithms R and C must run in real time. So feature representation must be obtained quickly. And the classification must be obtained quickly. So the efficient implementation, apart from choosing a theoretically fast algorithm, is essential. So that would be all about the information theoretic model. Now, the computation complexity model, it's more abstract. Now, here, everything is random. So what we do is sampling random packets, running a probabilistic algorithm, and getting the probability that the algorithm decides well. So that's actually how you should interpret all this. The goal of the rest of this talk is to introduce the terminology, more or less, because most students are not familiar with this. Now, a large network is modeled in this computational complexity model as an so-called autonomous system. So I'm introducing a lot of new concepts that only mathematicians know. However, we have to explain that to the mostly engineers that attend this course. So it's an autonomous system. It has many entry points that are called border gateways. Traffic is generated by external users, and each user can send traffic to each border gateway. Now, a network packet is a tuple. You see, the identifier of the sender, the time instant when the packet was sent, the point of entry, so which border gateway, and the payload. So the only useful information here is the payload. However, the rest is meta information that is necessary to perform communication. So we have identification of the sender, SID, time is timestamp of the occurrence of the packet P, and point of entry is which border gateways we use. The payload is what we actually send in this packet. Now, if we are considering network operation, so means the autonomous system operation, at any time, a string of packets enters the autonomous system through any of its border gateways. Each packet in the stream can trigger an event in the autonomous system, which means an attack. Now, we can simplify the model, and we usually do, by only allowing one border gateway. So we consider the network, as you see on most drawings. You have a cloud and some entry, just one. It does not affect generality, so we can always generalize to more inputs, so it doesn't change the outcomes of our experiments. So what is an attack in this setting? An attack is any sequence of C packets that is greater or equal to 1, where C is greater or equal to 1, that successfully alters the state of the machine, autonomous system, to achieve a malicious goal. So it gets from one state to another state, where this another state is not wanted. We don't want our network to get to that state. So then it's an attack, because we can have any sequence of packets that will not change the state, so it's not an attack. The state of the autonomous system, the network, at time t is phi of t. So it's a function. Well, it's a... Yeah, we can say that. It's a set of properties. That's how we can say. So phi of t is a set of properties. So this state, it can be that available bandwidth is this. Or internal states of all hosts in the AS are good. Something like that. So it would be a good state. Now, this is difficult to understand. A polynomial time computable predicate. What is a predicate? Predicate is a function returning 0 or 1. Okay? Now, this predicate is raw. 1 to n, that's the size of input. The size of input is n. T is the timestamp. Phi of t is the state. Okay? So we define this polynomial time computable predicate based on the input, that is the time and the state. N is a security parameter, which is the size of the input, more or less. Now, define this all that this way. What is the model of an attack? You see, as we said, everything is probability. So, you see, efficiently samplable probability distribution A over all packet sequences PS, P1 to PL. So, imagine that you take PL packets at a time. Now, you select these packets in an efficient way, which means fast. That means efficiently samplable probability distribution. These packets are random. They belong to some they have some distribution, say Gaussian or uniform, whatever. Now you take a sample, you take L packets at random, you get this PS, the packet sequence. Then you perform some experiment with this sequence of packets, which means you send these packets to your network. That's our experiment. And the probability that this experiment is not successful, which means that the attack is not successful, because this is distribution of attack patterns. Okay? The probability of the experiment being not successful is small. Small means that it is smaller than 1 divided by some polynomial that is in N. You see, everything is random, random, random. And N is larger, of course. Now, what is the experiment? Draw a sequence of packets, so take PL, okay? Send them to the network. The autonomous system is forced to go to the unwanted state phi of t, and then this predicate evaluates to the bit B, which is 1. So it is either attack or not. So raw is actually the whether it is an attack or not. So it's a function that gives you answer. Is this an attack or is it an attack, but within the network. Okay? So, this is the experiment. I take L packets, send them to the network, and then the network has this function that will say whether this phi of t will be changed. And then if it is changed to an unwanted state, the function returns 1, which means the attack is successful. Now, there may be several attacks, A1, A2, A3. We call it a class of attacks. So that's attacks. Now we need normal traffic distribution, very similar. So efficiently samplable probability distribution N over the set of packets such that the probability that the experiment is successful is small. You see, before that it was close to 1. Sorry, here. So the probability that it was not successful was small. Now it is the probability that it is successful is small. Why is that? Okay, I take L packets at a time, but they are samples from a distribution of normal traffic. So I take L normal packets, send them to the network, and the network says my state is not changed. So error returns 0 with high probability. So these were the functions that we define in our model. Now, what are the components of the model? In the information theoretic model, we first define the components and then the function. Now we first define the function and now the components. But, we do the same, essentially. Now, the components are essentially very similar. So we have a representation algorithm, we have a classification algorithm. So that was before. But now we have what they call a data structure algorithm, which actually encompasses several algorithms from before. So, what can be a representation algorithm? It can be data filtering, data formatting, feature selection, for example, which is the most important here. These two are technical. So, feature selection, that's art. So, what features to select? Now, the data structure algorithm is collection of data, aggregation of data, creation of knowledge base. So, all that. So in the previous case, it was profiling. And a classification algorithm is the detection. It can be misuse-based, it can be anomaly-based. It can be response, not only detection. So it can be prevention. It can be information tracing, just logging. It can be visualization. We are not interested in these two. We are a bit interested in the response, and we are mostly interested in detection. Now, there are, as before, two phases of IDS execution. The initialization phase, where we use the algorithm S, which is the data structure algorithm, and the detection phase, in which we use the algorithm C, which is the classification algorithm. The algorithm R is used in both the initialization phase and the detection phase. Why? Because we have to represent the data. So it's feature selection, more or less, what to measure. So we use that as before. In both creating the IDS and executing the IDS, we need feature selection. So in the initialization phase, the data structure algorithm S uses the representation algorithm to process a data stream obtained from a normal traffic or known attacks. The output is, well, the knowledge base, a data structure that is used in the detection phase. In the detection phase, the classification algorithm C is run with the data structure obtained previously as input, and the output is it good or bad? Okay, the decision, if there was an attack in the input sequence of packets, if yes, which attack? Or if yes, is it a new attack? Never seen before. Now, in this case, the representation algorithm maps a sequence of data packets entering the network, autonomous system, into a fixed-length tuple, which is a point in a high-dimensional space. CPU time, memory usage, network usage, that's in three-dimensional space, it's one point. Now, what are the requirements for an IDS? N is a security parameter, mostly size of the input. So you should think about that this way. Big N is the distribution of normal traffic. For each attack, you have its own distribution, which means a sequence of packets that are contained in this attack. All the attack and normal distributions are efficiently samplable, which means I can choose these L packets easily. So I don't have to compute I don't know what to get these packets. And this, with pairwise disjoint supports. You see what it is. Support is the value, more or less, which means sequence of packets for this attack is different from the sequence of packets from that attack. So that essentially means pairwise disjoint supports. Now, this is the most difficult to understand. So how does it work? An IDS is a triple of polynomial time algorithms, R, S, and C. Well, that's easy to understand, so they are efficient. So you can easily get the output of R, easily get the output of S, and easily get the output of C. Now, on input of size N, and the sequence of this number of packets, P, RW, so that's how many packets you take, the algorithm R, the representation algorithm, returns some d-tuple R. So these are the features, the feature vector. So this RW is called the representation window. So you take several packets, and from these packets you extract the features, the measurements, and that's called R. So this feature vector, more or less. Now, on input of size N and the distributions for normal traffic and each of these attacks, the algorithm S, this selection, returns a data structure of size smaller than this, M of init. By the way, if you read the paper, at some place they say M of int, that's an error. So it should be M of init. Okay? So don't be confused. And on output of size N, a data structure, DS, and the sequence of MDET packets, which is a detection window, and the class of attack C, the algorithm C returns a classification value out. Now, what does this mean? I take DET packets, say 1,000 packets. In these 1,000 packets, there may be 100 packets that are attack. DW. And this attack is from this class, say, denial of service. Okay? So that's how you should read this sentence. And then the classification is good or bad. That's what you get from the classification algorithm. So I hope you have understood these variables. So we summarize that on this slide. So the representation window RW is the window of packets that are used in a single execution of the algorithm R. It's usually a small value. It may be it's usually one. So you need to measure, for example, CPU usage, memory usage, and network usage. You at the time T, you measure them on, say, processing of single packet or something like that. So it's just one packet or a very small number of packets. In general, it's a small value. Now, M of init, it's the length of the packet stream used in the initialization phase. So maybe a lot of packets for training. M of dat is the length of the packet stream used in the detection phase. And these are classified by C. For example, if you take dat to be 1,000, you run the classification algorithm, that will give you 300 bad and 700 good. So these 300 bad, they will be, this is 300, so DW. It's the maximum distance between the first and the last packet of an attack sequence, you see? So out of 1,000, say, packets that you take at a time to classify, these DW, 300 packets, are actually the attack. The rest is not attack. So your classifier will give you, this class contains 300 elements, and that class contains 700 elements. So DW is 300 in this case. Now, all these would be nice to understand if it were not random. Now, you should consider them all random numbers. So RW, D, M of init, M of dat, and DW are bounded by polynomials in N, which means of all the possible intrusion detection systems, you sample at random and get these values. So that's how they look at the problem. Now, why are we doing this? With this model, in order to compute two things, sensitivity and detection. So sensitivity is defined by means of so-called computational indistinguishability, you see? Sensitivity means that a fixed window of network traffic entering autonomous system, which means network, can be alternatively represented in such a way that the output of the representation algorithm R behaves quite differently depending on whether it is an attack or normal. And this attack may be unknown attack. So that's computational distinguishability, okay? Which means if I send a sequence of packets that define some abnormal sequence or an attack, then the network is capable of distinguishing that from normal sequence. So that's called sensitivity. And then detection. If the representation algorithm satisfies the sensitivity requirement, then a data structure and the classification algorithm should allow to detect with high probability any new attack or a variation of an old attack in an arbitrarily large traffic window. So I can take 1,000 packets at a time, 2,000 packets at a time, do the classification, the classifier will give you 500 good and 1,500 bad. So the classification can be performed well. Now, this works only if your representation algorithm is good. So it is sensitive enough to distinguish between representing good and bad traffic. So the representation algorithm is, this is essentially the same answer to the same question that we put with information theoretic model. There we said CR actually determines the quality. So the CID is determined by CR. It cannot be better than CR. So the representation algorithm actually rules in both cases, because if your R here in this model is not sensitive, then the classification algorithm can be ideal. You will not get the desired result. So, how do we analyze ideas with this methodology? We given IDS as a triple of algorithms, R, S, and C, we have to prove that it satisfies the sensitivity requirement for some parameters. So what parameters to set to get this R good enough to distinguish a new attack from the previously known ones or normal traffic? And then the detection requirement for some appropriate parameters if the sensitivity requirement is set. So if our representation algorithm is good enough, then your classification algorithm can distinguish between good or bad in a satisfactory way. Now, how do we get this in a constructive way, which means we have to find these parameters that will make our algorithm R sensitive enough and that will make our algorithm C good enough. Which actually concludes this lecture and concludes this course in the sense of lectures. Now, tomorrow we exercise what we did last time and what we did today. So it will be a small extension of the exercise 4. So tomorrow we first do the exercise 4. We compute the true positive rate, false positive rate, base rate, fallacy check, etc., etc., what parameters to choose to get to reduce this base rate fallacy probability. And then we do this computation of CID and such. So that will be all for today. Tomorrow at normal hours, 1:15, we do the exercise, and with this we finish the course.
Thank you. It is kind of theoretic, but a system of like this will be capable of detecting a zero-D intrusion attack.
So the system has to be designed in such a way that the new attack is actually possible to detect.
Okay.
So that's the goal. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I'll be here tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, I haven't seen him today.